This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing. My next guest, oh, this is so much fun. She's driving me to drink, and I love it. I am so happy to welcome back to Joy on Paper, Jillian Harvey, and the name of her new book is A Year at the French Farmhouse, Escape to France, for the perfect, brand new, uplifting, feel-good book. Yes. Hi, Jillian. Bonjour.
Hello. Hi. Bonjour. How are you?
Okay. Oh, well, whenever I read you, I do get this urge to have a glass of wine or two. Which, and a chocolate croissant, I must say. So, but we have discovered from reading this book that a few glasses of wine can get you in deep trouble.
It certainly can, yes.
Oh, you must have had fun writing this book. This is delightful.
Oh, thank you.
So, what do you want to tell us about it? Because this is sort of like, what's the single woman version of French Fields, that English, wonderful English comedy. I love it, and I love the book. So tell us what happened. What happens to poor Lily Butterworth?
I've been living in France for 12 years now, and I wanted to set a book in France, but I was kind of waiting for the right idea. I didn't want to just put one here for the sake of it, if that made sense. And I just had this sudden flash of inspiration. What would happen if you did something impulsive? The most impulsive thing I could think of when it came to sort of finding yourself in France was to buy a house on eBay. What would happen if you did that? And then taking it a bit further, what would happen if you did it by accident without really meaning to, which is what happens to my main character in the book. And she's sort of fed up, had a few drinks, and decides to just scroll through for some holidays and ends up getting more than she bargained for. But I suppose part of it is the kind of the little mistakes we've all probably made when shopping online, not reading the small print, finding something is not quite what we expected it to be, but just on a huge scale for her.
A really, really big, huge scale.
Yes, just a bit.
a little bit, you know, 43,000 pounds. Yeah. It's so funny. The whole story is so funny. And, of course, it starts off, it starts off that with a redundancy. Now, I love that word. It's so much, somehow it seems so much kinder than the American version, you're fired.
Yeah.
One feels one, I don't know, somehow one might just look at that word and think, well, you know, it's not so bad, redundancy. And, you know, and it worked for Lee Child, as you know. He was made redundant at the age of 39, when he was working for Granada Television, and they made him redundant. And as you know, it wasn't the end of the world. He decided to write a book in which he used the names of all of the people who fired him and then bashed their heads against cars.
Excellent idea.
Excellent. And it worked out very well for him.
Yes, certainly did.
So, but have you ever been made redundant? Do you have that personal feeling of what it's like to be made redundant?
No, I haven't. Not so far, anyway. But I have sort of seen it happen to people, and also I've also got to this sort of the age where, as a woman, you sometimes feel a little bit sidelined. And I think it's a combination of those things that Lily feels when she's made redundant. She suddenly feels like surplus to requirements, not really needed, and it's a time of life that she's in. She's just in her sort of coming up for her mid-40s, where she's feeling a little bit sidelined and wondering what the point of everything is. And it's all that culmination of all those things together. I think the idea of being redundant, as in not needed anymore, is quite offensive as well for her, because from her point of view, at least, she's done a lot for this company and not really been recognised for it, and really hung on really out of a sense of loyalty, and then found out that there was no loyalty the other way. So it's that kind of it's a really big blow for her right at the beginning of the book, and it really sort of knocks her for six.
But as we discover, it leads to some wonderful things for her too. I have never been made redundant because I've always been the boss. I've always owned the companies that I've created. But I have actually made people redundant. And over the years, looking back on it, I always try to do it very kindly, although a few times not so kindly. And I've wondered if they made something great out of their lives after I made them redundant.
Yes, that's it. I mean, it can be. I think sometimes, I mean, we're all afraid of that sort of thing, that kind of curveball that life deals us sometimes, whether it's redundancy or something else. And that's how we manage that in the moment, and the opportunities that come our way. Giving life a good shake-up can sometimes work out really well, can't it? And I think, I mean, I do work for a few women's magazines, and I've been writing about women who age about sort of 35 to 90 and beyond, really, for years. And it's always amazed me the kind of resourcefulness that people and the wonderful things that some of them do. And really always to defy this stereotype that is around sometimes about women and about men, I think, when you reach middle age and beyond. And I suppose it's that sort of seizing the day. You know, you can lie down and cry, or you can turn everything around and really grab life and think, right, this is an opportunity. It doesn't have to be the end of the road. It's the beginning of a new road. And it's that sort of positive spirit that I think Lily eventually taps into after a few glasses of wine, at least.
Exactly. And of course, we have the fun, the absolute fun is this plot line that I love always, when someone has to refurbish a house or a hotel they inherit or something like that. Mm. I love this whole refurbishing business. Because I went through it, I did buy, and actually I did buy, not on an impulse because I planned it, but I did buy when I was 21 years old, a 400-year-old cottage, and discovered that it had wet rot and dry rot. And
oh, no.
That was in Sonning, Sonning just outside of Henley. So I know that feeling of having everything ripped apart. So tell us about this process. Did you go through that when you moved to France? Did you have to do refurbishing?
Well, I think everyone that I know who's moved over here from somewhere else, who hasn't sort of started off in France, has had an experience along these lines somewhere along the way. And I don't know anyone who's finished their house. And I think we started off, we did have not quite as dilapidated as the house that Lily buys in the novel, but we had a house that was stone and old and had been done up a bit, but we found that every job had another job underneath. So you rip off the wallpaper and think you're making things better, only to realize that you probably should have just left it there. and that, and experiences of friends and things, and I think you learn, because when you first come over here you think, why are all the French people buying all the modern houses, these sort of identikit houses, when there's such beautiful stone houses on the market? And then you find out when you buy one. That said, I think there's a lot, they can be absolutely beautiful, obviously, when they are done properly. It's just, it's something to really, it's a learning curve, I think. Each house is individual in its own way and has its plus points and minus points, and I think there's lots of war stories around that I've overheard over the years, where people have bitten off more than they can chew when it comes to what they've bought. So it's one of those things, isn't it, that again, things that go wrong in life, as long as they're not too terrible, turn out to be great anecdotes later on. And so that sort of idea that humour can come from these disastrous situations, I've really tried to harness that with her renovations.
Much like Peter Mall did with A Year in Provence. I love his books. I love his writing. You know, over the years, as you read it, and then later on when they did the television series, which was so fabulous. As a matter of fact, I was thinking of that when I read your book. I was thinking, oh, this would be a delightful television show. Because people love this kind of story.
it's an adventure, isn't it? I suppose it's that idea of sort of what would happen. Because I think, I mean, my husband and I, when we moved over here, we didn't do it in a drunken stupor on eBay, but it was quite impulsive, and it was more of a, let's just do something different. We were under a lot of pressure in our jobs, and there was a lot of general pressure around, and we just thought, we don't actually have to live this life. We can live any life we want. And it was that moment. I think it was just because we had a perfect storm of stress and financial pressures and things like that, and we just kind of sidestepped into this whole different life. And I think it is the kind of thing you think you might do one day and maybe never get round to. And we're not really the sort of people who you would expect to do what we did, but it worked out well for us. And I think once you've done that, or you've watched someone do that, you realise that there are no real rules for how our lives should go and where we should live and what we should do. And it's just opening up that possibility. And this is just one of those possibilities that people have, that you could sort of totally reinvent yourself in a new country if you wanted to, which obviously is what happens.
Well, I think it's a wonderful book. Really,
thank you.
It's one of these books that you sit back and you read and you just sort of melt into it. You just, oh yes, I'm here. Oh. I'm just so relaxed, and it helps if you have a glass of wine. But it's just so relaxed and a lovely, lovely. Yeah. You know, for me, it was just such a pleasure. And this is the kind of book that, you know, people need these books. They need, you know, it's not, you know, they have a lot of romance books. They have a lot of cozy mystery books. But when I read it, I was just happy that there wasn't a lot of other things. Just this sort of life of learning, of what she's going to discover on this new part of her life. There was this unfolding of the story. I enjoyed it so much.
Mm. Oh, well, thank you. That's really lovely to say.
Well, and you're a lovely writer. You have a you're very, very
thank
good.
You.
Of course, you're, as you said, you're a journalist, so you've done a lot of work. Were you planning to be a writer when you were in school?
Yeah, when I was sort of in my early years at school, I wanted to be a writer. That's all I ever really wanted to do. But I think various kind of careers advisors and teachers over the years, they try to manage your expectations a bit. And in the end, I felt really that would never happen for me. So just because it's the sort of thing that happens to other people, isn't it? Being an author and that sort of thing. So I started off as an English teacher, and then it was moving to France that really gave me the time to work on my writing. And that's when I started to do freelance and that sort of thing there. So it has been a completely different life for me over here as well.
So this gave you a sound background, though, in writing, in reading good books. What type of books were the most influential to you?
Oh, it's interesting. I mean, because obviously certainly on the degree I did, you do read a lot of classics, and you read a lot of quite hard-hitting texts, like Pat Barker's Regeneration Trilogy was one of my favourites when I was studying. But then when I finished studying, and I found it hard to read for a little while because I just wanted to analyse everything. I couldn't just be there in the book and enjoy it for what it was. It took me a while to kind of reset. And when I did, I picked up Tony Parsons' Man and Boy, and I found that this is almost a different genre for me because it had that quality writing there, but it was also funny and it had pathos, and it would just really, it was such a warmly written book. And that's really, he sort of inspired me. David Nichols, Helen Fielding, Sue Townsend, all those kind of, there's humor there, there's lightness, there's reality, and that's the kind of writing I really aspired to. So although my English degree and gave me a good background in reading and understanding how text works and that sort of thing, it was really afterwards that I found the kind of writer I really wanted to be, I think. So slightly less Dickens and a little bit more Tony Parsons, I think.
Well, it's coming up to December. Do you read The Christmas Carol every year?
No, but I definitely watch it. I usually watch it, and I have read it, obviously. But now I've got my kids, we tend to watch the Muppet version, which actually, you know, it's I never thought I'd well up to watching something with the Muppets in, but it's quite touching adaptation of it. So we do enjoy that every Christmas.
When you were in school and studying, were you more a Charlotte Bronte enthusiast, Jane Austen? Because for me, it was Jane Austen, which is why I moved to England. I wanted to live near where she was born.
Oh, yes. Actually, for me, Jane Austen as well, and particularly Pride and Prejudice, which is probably one of the few books I've read more than four or five times. I just used to, whenever I ran out of books, and I think, you know, when I was growing up, obviously you couldn't just quickly put another one on your Kindle. You had to put time aside to go to the bookshop. So you'd go back to your old favourites, and definitely Pride and Prejudice. I just really enjoyed that. And again, there's that sort of observational humour there, isn't there, which... And you pick up something different every time you read it. So, yeah, definitely an Austen leaning reader.
That's great. Well, I think the new book is just wonderful. And it's called A Year at the French Farmhouse. And it is an escape to France because you feel that you're there. I was reading it, and after a while, I sort of looked around myself, and I think, where am I headed to France? And really was so lovely. So people can get it. It's online. You know, where I'm sure a lot of bookstores nowadays. And what's your website and your social media so people can follow you?
Okay. So the website is gillianharvey.com, and I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Jill+5.
Okay, and it's spelled with a G, Gillian.
That's right, yeah.
Gillian Harvey. I love it.
That's it, yeah.
Proper way to do it. And so tell me, is your French, how good is your French? Can you pass for a French woman, or you still have a British accent?
Oh, no. I find it hard to shape the accent. It's getting better, although... I always like to think, because when I hear French people talking English, they have really lovely accent, and I think, well, maybe my accent sounds nice to them when I speak French. So that's what I'm clinging on to. My French is okay.
I don't think it does. I really don't think they don't appreciate. They don't appreciate our accents. I don't know, and it's really not fair because we love their accents, right? But they don't like our accents.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, we really do.
I don't know.
It's such a shame.
It is.
But it's quite a precise language, isn't it, French? And I think, you know, you have to really get the pronunciation right to be understood. But I'll never be as good as I want to be at French, because I think every time I get to one level, I realise there's a whole other level that I want to be at, and it sort of unravels in front of me. But I keep working at it anyway.
But I bet your kids have a great French accent.
They are amazing. They speak English with an English accent and French with a French accent. So they really do have the best of both worlds.
Oh, well,
it's always amazing when they've got friends around and they're gabbling away, and you just think, wow, it's just incredible, isn't it? What the brain can do at a young age. It's just amazing.
Exactly. Well, Gillian Harvey, I think you're wonderful. You're delightful. And I want people to get your book and just have a wonderful, wonderful day. Just reading this book, it's like, it is like going into another world. Again, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. I think you're terrific, a wonderful writer. And it was just fun. It's just fun to talk to you.
Thank you. And you too. I appreciate you having me on. It's been lovely.
Okay. Bye-bye now. Bye. Okay. Gillian Harvey. What is so nice about this book? As I said, it's not heavy into anything. And that's what when I was reading, I was thinking, it's just not heavy into anything. I didn't have to think about clues. I didn't have to think about romance, really. There's all these elements. I didn't have to think about blood and guts. I've been getting a lot of very bloody books lately. I'm not English bloody kind of books, but I'm, you know, books with a lot of gore and stuff. I've got to really control the publicists who are sending me these books, because perhaps it's something that happened during the pandemic. Anyway, I want to highly recommend this book. It's really wonderful. A Year at the French Farmhouse. And it will give you a day at the French Farmhouse, because you won't put it down. I'm telling you, you'll read it in a day. It's a delightful book. Bye-bye.